From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on April 15th, 2024, from here at South Carolina Public Radio Studios in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we preview what's on tap this week at the State House. We look at the governor's schedule and preview a big hearing on Capitol Hill. We revisit my interview with USC economist Dr. Joy Von Nessen.
No way.
Didn't forget that. We're going to continue our conversation about the hot economy and jobs report that came out for March. We briefly update you on some of the biggest moves on the campaign trail. And what is she doing now?
I don't know.
Nikki Haley has a new gig.
Uh-huh.
The Lead loves hearing from everybody. That's why we have a voicemail box set up that you can call day or night, 24/7, 366. In a year like this, it's 366. Hot takes, questions, anything you need, 803-563-7169. We use our own discretion on who makes it on the podcast, but if you're cool, we'll let it slide. 803-563-7169. All right, let's start off by looking at what's on tap this week.
All right.
In the State House, the House has a pretty empty calendar after working through its most pressing bills last week ahead of
crossover.
There is a joint assembly set for Wednesday at noon with House and Senate members convening to elect judges for a multitude of positions on the State Court of Appeals, Circuit Court, down on to Family Court. Let the horse trading begin. There will also be elections for Board of Trustees to several universities after that election. So elections on elections. On Thursday morning, a House Judiciary Subcommittee will take up the Senate-approved Judicial Reform Bill S-1046 that changes the makeup of the Judicial Merit Selection Commission. So selections, elections, commissions. Over in the Senate this week, members will be working through their 48-page calendar. That comes with 15 legislative days left in the session. And remember, next week, the Senate will be debating its version of the $13.8 billion budget on the floor. The Senate Judiciary Committee and Finance Committee will both meet on Tuesday. On Wednesday, the Transportation Committee will receive a State of the DOT presentation from newly sworn-in SCDOT Secretary Justin Powell. We know you're listening, Justin. We'll have a recap in Saturday's pod. Now let's go to the governor's schedule.
Okay, let's go.
This week on Wednesday, Governor McMaster will speak at the South Carolina State Firefighters Association Spring Legislative Luncheon in Columbia. On Thursday afternoon, McMaster will attend the grand opening of United Community Bank headquarters in Greenville. And then on Friday and Sunday, the governor will attend the RBC Heritage Golf Tournament in Hilton Head. Let's go from Hilton Head to Congress.
Okay.
We got one big thing happening in Congress this week that we're watching, and that is a hearing on Wednesday headed by Connecticut Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal, who leads the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. I know we're not a Connecticut podcast, but Blumenthal will host Boeing engineer turned whistleblower Sam Salapour, who has recently made waves over alleged unresolved assembly issues on the 787 Dreamliner line. There will be another hearing this week involving Boeing and its 737 MAX aircraft. But since that twin-aisle 787 jet is built in North Charleston, that hearing is on us, folks. Especially after a previous Boeing whistleblower was found dead by an alleged self-inflicted gunshot wound in Charleston in early March, ahead of testimony he was set to give. John Barnett worked for Boeing for more than 30 years before retiring in 2017. For his last 7 years at the aerospace giant, he served as a quality manager in North Charleston on the 787 line. But back to the State House briefly.
Well, fine then.
Briefly. Lawyer and Charleston Democrat Representative Marvin Pendarvis is being sued over forgery and legal malpractice claims made by a client who says Pendarvis forged his signature for a settlement he did not approve. The client, Adrian Lewis, has retained well-known lawyers Eric Bland and Ronnie Richter. You may know those names from the Murdoch murder trial because they represented several of Alec Murdoch's clients that the convicted double murderer defrauded. Pendarvis has represented District 113 since 2017 and is unopposed this year. And we take a brief pause here to revisit one of our go-to economists, Dr. Joy Von Nessen with the University of South Carolina Darla-Moore School of Business. I brought you part of our conversation on Saturday's podcast, but since I spoke with him for the entire episode of This Week in South Carolina, I wanted to share another part of our conversation that wasn't just about inflation. You guys are probably like, okay, we get it about inflation, blah, blah, blah. But we chatted about the still very hot jobs market with some 303,000 jobs added in March, beating expectations and potentially stifling additional rate cuts. Here was Joey's take on that jobs report.
Because we have such a strong labor market, I think the Fed is more likely to favor leaving interest rates where they are for longer. Because remember, the Fed has two goals. They have price stability and full employment. So they want to keep inflation low, but they also want to maximize employment levels. Unemployment is historically low. That's true, especially in South Carolina, but for the U.S. as a whole. So they have some wiggle room there to keep interest rates higher for longer, even if it has or begins to have an effect on the labor market. Now, that's, of course, not good news for individuals, but from the Fed's perspective of having to balance those two, the strong labor market means they have more flexibility to wait and see, wait longer before cutting rates.
And a big part of that, too, is immigration. It's a big driver of the unemployment rate going down and staying down. How critical is it to have that robust immigration system when it comes to having a supply of workers? I mean, you look at other countries that don't have the immigration that America has, the good and the bad of it, but also how it just continues to feed our economy.
Well, immigration has certainly been part of why we've seen these employment numbers grow. That's been true for the last several years. And we are still in a labor shortage, no question about that. And most industries are seeing it. Most businesses are seeing it. That's certainly true in South Carolina. And so when you look at if you look at it from a business perspective and you say, well, how do I solve my labor problem, right? And I think about the three I's. You got three ways of doing it. You can incentivize, which is you pay more, provide more flexibility, benefits, and so forth. You can engage in innovation, so lessen your need for workers through the adoption of technology. And then you have immigration, which is the third element. And so that's got to be part of the story and part of the solution.
Yeah, Joey, that second I, innovation, AI is everywhere right now. Everyone's talking about AI. There's concern about what that could mean for the labor market. I'm sure students, you know, business leaders and policymakers you speak with express concerns. What are you telling them about the future of AI and how it could change things?
Well, I think first we have to distinguish between automation and AI, which are very different. So automation is something that's already here and something that we see adopted on a regular basis. And looking at technology to help address a labor shortage can be as basic as, for example, a company, let's say a restaurant, that uses an app for you or I to order lunch on our phones rather than going up to the counter. Right, so all of a sudden, they don't need quite as many staff to do just as much business. So that's using technology, but that's not necessarily AI. But that's part of the strategy that businesses are taking right now to deal with the labor shortage. From an AI perspective, I think that's much more up in the air because it's coming. We're going to see more adoption of AI. We hear all about ChatGPT and the assistance that it could provide. So it's coming. I don't think that's this year, but I think that we just have to continue to track the progress of that technology and see at what point it becomes more regularly used in the workplace. There's no question that it's coming, but again, a lot of uncertainties there right now.
Do you crack down on your students using ChatGPT at all?
Well, there are multiple philosophies on that. you have to prevent them from cheating, of course. Yeah. But I think the other element is teaching them how to use it and use it effectively. Because when we look at any technology and how it disrupts the labor force, it's typically workers who know how to use it replacing workers who don't know how to use it. And that's true in almost every profession. You don't necessarily see, you do in some cases, but in many industries, workers aren't just laid off and replaced by a particular technology. It's usually those that can't integrate the technology or learn the technology in a way to make them more productive. And so we have to teach students, this is the future, this is coming. How do you use this to make yourself more productive and more valuable in the workplace?
So definitely being rewritten into the curriculum over at the Darla Moore School of Business, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's changing every day. And I talk to professors all the time that are thinking this through. And how do you responsibly incorporate it into the curriculum, letting students learn how to use it as a tool, but obviously not replacing the work that they need to do for themselves.
A fine line to walk. Joey, another fine line that we walk is how people feel about the economy versus what is actually shown in the data. This is my favorite question to ask you, and you can give me the same response, it's okay. But a Wall Street Journal headline the other day summed it up in saying, in today's economy, voters' vibes battle with clear-cut data. We're not talking about a recession, but a vibe session. The vibes are at war with the facts, and it's winning. One case in point was 47% to 41% more journal respondents think their investments or retirement savings went in the wrong direction the past year, a period when the stock market was roaring to record highs, home values held steady or rose, and interest on savings went up. Of course, it's still playing catch up to the year before, but it hardly qualifies as the wrong direction. Is it really more of a matter of what is individually affecting me, whether that's grocery prices, whether that's the stock market or the pump? I mean, is it just what comes down to how it affects all of us individually?
I think that's right. And the problem with inflation is it really, it doesn't spare anybody, mm-hmm. right? So we all see prices rising. And it's very clear that if you look at wage growth versus inflation over the last 3 or 4 years, inflation has gone up more than wages. Prices have risen more than wages have overall. And that's especially true when you look at sectors where consumers are spending money every day. So if you look at the gas pump or when you're going to the grocery store, prices have risen significantly. And to put some numbers on that, wages overall have risen about 15% in the last 3 years. If you look at inflation as a whole, it's up about 20%, but food and energy prices are up between 25 and 30%, depending on how you measure it. That's a big difference. And consumers see that every day. And so I think that's largely what they're responding to. So even though the economy is doing well, we are not likely to see a recession this year. If that's what you're seeing and what you're evaluating as your primary metric for the economy, then that creates a bit of a disconnect there. And as a result, you see some of these conflicting data. Consumer sentiment still very low, but that's because consumers have lost purchasing power. They are paying more, and that has a significant impact.
You can find that entire show and more on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. Let's get some 2024 trail bites for y'all. That's right. For the back half of the pod, we're going to jump on the 2024 presidential campaign trail. Ah! Remember that? Yeah, I don't either. I want to continuously bring y'all updates, though, of the biggest moments from the trail just to keep you connected. Remember, we have a big election in November. I'm going to sprinkle these in here now and then because soon, once the State House is gone, we're going to be lost and adrift. Like a maritime vessel, listless. But don't worry, we'll be bringing you these updates because I know you can get all this over and over again on cable news and from national outlets, but maybe you're not crazy about all that noise and you don't really follow the news like that. That's where I'll give you these little trail bites. Zero calories, no fat.
Wow.
Now let's start with former President Donald Trump, who last week came out against a national abortion ban after the three Supreme Court justices he appointed helped overturn the landmark abortion access case Roe v. Wade and subsequent precedent in the summer of 2022. Trump's refusal to back a national ban is just the latest turn in his history of abortion. Back in 1999, he was pro-choice and then pivoted to being pro-life in 2011 when contemplating a run. Then in 2016, while running for president, he said there should be some form of punishment for the women who get abortions. Fast forward to 2018 when he pushed to overturn Roe v. Wade and advocated for a 20-week national ban back in 2018. Now, I don't know if flip-flopping is accurately depicting all that, but of course no one seems to worry about that these days anyway. But Trump's decision not to back a national ban has led to a spat with Senator Lindsey Graham, a one-time Trump critic-turned-ally following the 2016 election. This comes as Arizona's Supreme Court recently ruled in favor of an 1864 law that outlaws abortion except to save a mother's life, and also punishes providers with prison time. The Washington Post highlights the significance of that ruling in a report saying, quote, as a battleground state, there is a lot on the line in Arizona's looming elections. Biden is running for re-election after winning the state in 2020 by fewer than 11,000 votes. And the race for a Senate seat in the state could prove crucial in determining which party controls the body next year, quote. Republican lawmakers in Arizona shot down an effort to force a vote to overturn the ban last week. But Arizona voters may have a chance to overrule that decision at the ballot box in November. In the meantime, Democratic Attorney General Chris Mayes says she will not enforce the newly active law that was passed before Arizona was even a state. So again, we're talking about a big swing state here with a big issue and a lot at play. So these are the things we'll be watching leading up to Election Day in November. Also with Trump, jury selection for Trump's hush money case is underway in Manhattan in a case that is expected to last weeks, possibly even into June. This unprecedented event, a criminal trial of a former president, unfolds in the middle of the presidential campaign. Last March, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg charged Trump with 34 felonies, including falsifying business documents to conceal hush money payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels. This comes as NBC News reports that President Joe Biden's campaign is flush with cash and has ramped up hiring to the tune of 300 paid staffers across 9 states and 100 offices in parts of the country that will decide the 2024 election. This according to details provided by the campaign. Meanwhile, Trump advisors would not disclose staffing levels, but his ground game still seems to be at a nascent stage. His campaign hired state directors in Pennsylvania and Michigan last week, this according to people familiar with the recruitment process. Combined, the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee have fewer than 5 staff members in each of the battleground states. This according to 2 Republicans familiar with the committee and the Trump campaign's organizational structures in 2020 and 2024. This NBC News report continued and noted that at this point in 2020, when Trump was running as the incumbent, the Trump Victory Organization already had state directors, regional directors, and field organizers on the ground in battleground states, testing field operations and activating volunteers. So quite the contrast here. Now, on the Biden side of things, Semaphore reports that Biden's major new student relief plan is almost certain to face a round of court challenges from conservative opponents. But the administration is confident that this plan is, quote, more likely to survive, quote, than its predecessor that was blocked by the Supreme Court, according to the New York Times. The new effort is grounded in a different federal statute. It's being ironed out through a formal rulemaking process and is more carefully targeted at troubled borrowers, particularly those who now owe more than their original principal thanks to accrued interest or have already been repaying their loans for decades. And the Japanese Prime Minister, Fumio Kishida, visited the White House last week for bilateral security talks amid an ever-aggressive North Korea and rising China threat. This comes as Moscow's Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, met with Chinese Prime Minister Xi Jinping, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was in China meeting with her counterpart. So a lot of names, a lot of moving parts over there, folks. China is one of the few lifelines that Russia has left amid its war with Ukraine. On Thursday, Biden held trilateral negotiations with the Philippines, which, according to the AP, has had a mutual treaty in place with America for more than 70 years. Biden's forceful reinforcement of the American commitment comes in the midst of persistent skirmishes between the Philippine and Chinese coast guards in the disputed South China Sea. And you say to me, Gavin, who cares? Is this more maritime law that you're passing off as news? I say no. Reuters notes that China's dangerous and aggressive behavior in the South China Sea is worrisome because it's a conduit for more than $3 trillion of annual shipborne commerce. So if you'd like your imported goods and smooth, uninterrupted trade, well, you might want to take note, folks. And what is she doing now?
You tell me.
The Hudson Institute, a conservative think tank focused on international affairs and national security, announced Monday that Nikki Haley, the former governor of South Carolina and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, as well as former Republican presidential candidate, will be the next Walter P. Stern chair at the Hudson Institute. It's been just over a month since Haley ended her bid to become the Republican presidential nominee, and this gives her something to keep her name out there. I'm watching. We're all watching. I'm laughing. That's part of the Lead, Laugh, Love logo around here. Mantra. It's more of a lifestyle. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. Get out of your news. It's our break time. I'm on my break time. That laughter is A.T. Shire, folks, the producer of the Lead Podcast.
Thank you so much. Calm down, everybody.
We were just talking about laughter.
Don't crash your cars.
The joys of laughter.
Yes.
And the sad side of laughter, too.
Sometimes when you smile, you're sad, you know?
I smile through the sadness,
mm-hmm.
like a clown.
Gavin,
like
most of your times
are European clown.
Most of your times are dark times, right?
Mostly because I'm always inside, yes.
Yes.
I don't like the outdoors. The sun scares me.
Mm. Who even knows what it is?
Ra, is if it you're listening.
Is it a meteorite?
I'm still very scared.
It could be a meteorite.
It took us 30 minutes to start recording the podcast today.
Yeah.
We were on a roll.
We hit record and then talked for 30 minutes and then started recording.
But if you guys follow us on Patreon, if you're one of our
you
top tiers on Patreon,
that.
You get all that uncut laughs. It's so good.
Pure, uncut. Anyway,
no
Gavin,
plastic touches our conversation.
Speaking of cutting
glass.
To something new, we do have a call. Are you ready? Are you prepared? This is for you.
Hold on, let me get my papers.
Okay, assume the listening position.
I've taken my shoes off. Okay. I'm grounded.
Yeah. His crystal ball, it is activated.
The lights are off?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Joanna. I'm from upstate New York. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I wanted to say thank you for my special birthday shout-out. You appreciate that greatly. I have to say the pod has been very informative on Southern politics. I learned a lot, especially during the primary series. I did want to take this opportunity. I've had a little secret that I've been keeping, and I think now would be the perfect time to tell you guys that I bought all of those butter dishes. Every butter dish you received, Gavin, was for me. Your very best friend in the whole wide world. You're doing a great job. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, Joanna, baby J, thank you for calling. And the butter dishes. I knew the first one was from her, but I didn't know that our ruby carnival glass one, which you can hear here in the background, which now holds pens in the studio for any number of guests to receive.
Anybody that's in can touch it.
She knows we lived together in college, the like last year and a half of college.
Good for you.
And she knows what it's like to live with me and what it's like to cook with me, whatever.
And yet she still chooses to associate with
you. Well, you know, distance is good for us. But she's one of those friends where you can call and like literally talk about nothing for an hour and a half. And you're like, okay, well, I got to go to bed now because I've been talking about nothing for an hour and a half. She seemed a little sedate there, Joanne. I hope everything's okay, honey. I know you just had a birthday, but usually we're a little bit more lighter than that. But she's doing good. She has a new puppy dog named Kevin Bacon.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Kevin Barkin, it should have been.
Oh, that's a good one. Did you hear that, Joanna?
Just off the cuff, I came up with a better name than you. So, impressive. Anyway.
I would love to see you two go back and forth. Like, I could just sit back and smoke a cool, easy Marlboro menthol cigarette.
Very long one. Very long cigarette.
A very long cigarette.
A very long French cigarette.
And be like, oh, this is good.
Let
this
it burn Shelley Duvall style.
Look at that ash going. And Joanna also had a dog in college when we were living together, too. His name was Baxter, like from Anchorman. He's a little white dog. I can't remember what he was, though. But yeah, adorable. She's always clever with the names, clever at the spots on the spots. So.
Speaking of your friends,
maybe she'll
Gavin,
come and visit me.
Maybe.
Like my mother.
You could come on the pod in person if you wanted.
Yeah.
We don't care.
We'll do it.
We don't care about anything.
Live taping up in New York.
Ooh.
You know, that's all relevant to our listeners.
Yep. Anyway, Gavin, speaking of people, you are out with some people.
I'm a person.
And
a
question arose, and you haven't told me, but you do want me to weigh in on it. So what is it?
So a friend of mine who will not be named posed a question to me, and you know, we solicit questions from our listeners all the time. But this one was like, oh, this has A.T. Shire written all over it. Life coach, inspired chef, curator of...
Epicurean
of internet knowings. And I needed to go to my brain hive.
Yes.
And that is you.
Yes.
You're my alternate brain,
Thank
Brian.
You. Yes. It's not by choice, but it is true. Yes.
I ran out of space up here. And I'm like, give me some
Caitlin's
space.
Caitlin's upset about it.
You're my Apple Cloud.
Yes.
Cloud. So people have birthdays. Everyone has a birthday, allegedly.
Sure.
And when you go to the workplace, it's like school nowadays where everyone has to still celebrate their birthday. I was a July baby, never had to do that at school. Thank God you could pick the kids you wanted to come and not let the kids you don't want to come. Anyway, so the new thing now is this person's workplace used to be where you would say, oh, it's we're getting you a cake for your birthday.
I already hate this.
AT.
Yeah.
It's your birthday day, whatever. Now it has pivoted to there was a meeting, there was a decision made. Apparently there was also a survey done. But the new policy now for birthdays at this place is that you buy the cake for the person with the next birthday?
No. Absolutely not.
Correct answer.
I
So it's your birthday yesterday, you buy my cake today, I buy the cake for Amy.
No.
It's like, let's not do that. So the person I was talking to said, no bueno, and sent a reply all email like, please do not do this for me.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, this person goes into work the day after the email was sent. This person said, ever feel like you've walked into a room and everyone was just talking about you? Well, that was the vibe. No one talked a word all day. This person's very social to an extent. But, you know, I was just surprised. Like, I said, go ahead, send the email. Like, get it out there. I'm about saying that stuff. Don't just sit down and be like, like, that's a weird policy to do a hard pivot from, like, here's your birthday cake. I think it's weird just to have a birthday cake every person.
Work takes enough stuff from you.
Precisely.
That you don't need to be paying. That's so strange to me.
Don't do that if you're a manager. Don't do that. I think we always celebrate birthdays here at ETV, but it's now turned into like a month-long thing where it's like, not a month-long thing, but
all
like
the month.
Everyone's month.
Yeah.
You're having a big little happy thing over in mm-hmm. one of our spaces. And it's like, that's the way to do it. Make it equitable, make it easy, but don't put the burden of celebrating someone's birthday. You don't even know this person. Now I have to buy them a cake. Oh, and they're gluten-free and vegan.
One of my greatest accomplishments, truly, and I did start at ETV on Masters Week 2014.
Oh, so
this is my 10-year anniversary.
Hey.
And they do not know what my birthday is here. And I want to keep it that way. I never want to celebrate my birthday at work. It's just something that I don't like to do.
I loosely know your birthday.
That's fine. I'll bleep it if
I
you
think
say
it's around.
On that note, Gavin,
yes.
One thing you do know is the credits, so you might as well say
also,
them.
Also, go ahead and just say what you need to say. But also, folks, please weigh in. Give us some workplace culture cringe moments. We love that kind of stuff here at The Lead.
You do know that your work is your family and corporations are people.
Why are you leaving your family? You don't have to go to your family. We are your family here.
But work is just a family you get paid to be around.
Okay? Since we are state employees, the entire state we like to think of is our family.
You would call your family, wouldn't you? So anyway, Gavin, give them the number to call. Say the outro.
Give us a call. Be like Joanna. Let us know what's on your mind, 803-563-7169. You can always, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you don't want to call. I don't care. I mean, send us a butter dish. We got two. 1041 George Rogers Boulevard. Send it to the butter dish department. We'll get it. And you can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
It's the best vermin meat.
Really? I mean, it's not bad.
It's the best vermin you're going to get. I don't know what else I have to tell you.
They don't want you to hear what I'm saying.
Survival of the fittest means that this is the healthiest meat that you're going to get.